it's time for real fashion on Pop Off with Harry Jane Potter.
And a special welcome to you on Pop Off today. Hey, we've got a lot of things happening today, and I want to be able to share with you all sorts of things. Things that are going to make your life better. Things that will help you better. Things that are going to make your life a little bit easier. That's what Pop Off is all about. Oh, by the way, I got the cutest email. Matter of fact, I got it yesterday after the show. And strangely enough, I'll share it with you a little bit later. Remember we talked a little bit about marriage and how to keep marriage going and making sure it's going to be a positive thing instead of a negative thing? Well, the email is just so cute. You're just going to believe it. But I don't want to do that yet because we've got some pretty heavy topics we're going to cover at least at the very beginning of the show, and I think we need to do that first. Including, well, a little bit later on, we are going to be talking about husband hunting, and that's, you know, Mr. Right over Mr. Wrong, and in not in a silly, frivolous way. That's not what I'm looking at. What I'm looking at with this is to really search out what you are looking for and who you are looking for to make sure that it is the right person so you can have a good marriage. I mean, yesterday when we talked about the divorce rate, we were talking about the possibility of divorce at the rate of, I thought, like 50-60%. And the gal that we had on said, Susan, she said, no, it's more like 70%. I hate to disappoint you. So we don't want to have that. We want to set up the rules and some ideas so that you can move forward and not have to look back at all. In addition to that, we'll talk a little bit about, now, breast cancer really strikes fear in any woman. And you hear that word and it's like, oh, my God. But let me tell you something. There is some new technology that is almost what they call a spell check on the mammogram, because the mammogram is basically about the only thing that we have at this point to detect cancer and breast cancer as quickly as possible. We'll hear about that. But first, this first story that I have got is just incredible. I can't even imagine how this woman survived, but she did. She is a survivor, and she is going to tell us how to survive when you have lost that is beyond comprehension. That's coming up on Pop Off. Oh, talk about troubles. I mean, this woman faced a tragedy that most of us can't even imagine in any nightmare. I am totally serious about that. Her youngest son killed his father and then himself. Now, two lives ended in a bloody tragedy, but Margaret Margot has had to survive, and her book called The Uninvited Guest tells how. Now, Margaret works as a mental health director, and Lord knows she's got the skills to do it. Margot, are you there? Hello? Well, I don't think Margaret's with us yet. Well, we're going to have Margaret with us momentarily, because I think this is one topic that you definitely want to hear about. And this is what it's all about. We want to make sure that you know that survival is something that everyone has to do with. It's one of those things that is incredible in life, folks. But to think about this, that you have two lives that end, you know, one that is, you know, your son, your husband, these are your family. Now, sometimes if it happens in a tragedy, God forbid a World Trade Center or a car accident or an airplane accident, that's one thing. But having your son kill your husband and then himself and then have to live with that, that has got to be an absolutely incredible feat to be able to go on from there. You know, it's just amazing to know that a person can go on and survive and then be able to share that information with someone else. And that's what Margot is trying to do. It's Margaret Margot, and she wrote a book called The Uninvited Guest. And, of course, The Uninvited Guest is tragedy. Margot, nice to have you with us. I should say Margaret. Nice to have you with us on Pop Off.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Mary Jane. It's an honor to be able to do the work I do and educate and hopefully break the stigma of mental illness.
Well, you know, this is what it's all about. Now, this is not that long ago. This happened, what, in 2001?
Yes, it was 5 years ago.
Oh,
and it's the book is based on a personal tragedy of the murder-suicide of my husband and son.
Did you have any inkling that your son had problems?
When did we have an inkling? I can't hear you, Mary Jane. You're not real clear.
Okay. Is this a little bit better?
A little.
Okay. Yeah. When did you have an inkling that your son was having problems?
When Stephen was 14 years of age, he was out of a private parochial school into a public school.
Uh-huh.
And he began to, we thought, experiment with street drugs, which was marijuana at the time. And we had him consulted and what have you, and they felt that it was just a peer pressure thing, trying to meet new friends in a new area, and that it wasn't anything to really to be concerned about, that he would outgrow it. He had good grades in school and was doing fine.
Mm-hmm.
However, Mary Jane, the one point I want to make is each year mental illness savages millions of families.
Really?
And it is estimated that at least 37% of alcohol or drug abuse begins with some sort of mental illness.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. You know, were there symptoms? Were there signs? Was there something that said, we've got a problem, or was it totally blank to you?
It was totally dense to us because Stephen did well in school. He was extremely quiet and always seemed, of course, his diagnosis, his challenge was schizophrenia.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, we feel, looking back on everything now, that Stephen was preoccupied with the voices, which I based the title of my book on.
Uh-huh.
Those are the voices that tormented him throughout his adolescent years. And when he did go into the U.S. Navy, he was diagnosed schizophrenia.
I see. Now, explain, it was schizophrenia, correct?
Right.
Okay, explain to me what schizophrenia is. Give us a definition.
Okay, schizophrenia is a disease of the brain, which is a no-fault disease. You know, I try to say this so much when I do my speaking engagements. It's no one's fault. And most people are so hesitant to say, my son is schizophrenia, my daughter is bipolar, mine has deep depression, because it's the stigma that makes others feel, oh, there's something wrong with them.
Right.
There's something wrong with their family. Schizophrenia, however, is the presence of disillusions, hallucinations. Now, delusions are thinking things that are not true.
Hmm.
Hallucinations are seeing things that are not there. It's like having a bad dream while you're wide awake.
Oh.
At least 50% of people with schizophrenia have chemical dependency.
Yeah. Now, how do I even say this? You know, we look at it and say, well, why didn't someone do something about this poor child?
Okay. What we did when Stephen was in the Navy and had, which I write about in my book, The Uninvited Guest, which anyone can bring up my website, theuninvitedguest.org.
Is it theuninvitedguest?
.org.
Yeah, okay, good.
Mm-hmm.
So
and
when
you say, Mary Jane, why didn't we do something, it's very hard in society today to get a young person to talk about what's really going on.
I see.
In all the counseling that we had for Stephen from the age of, I will say, serious counseling, 16 years of age, till 21 when he was diagnosed and sent home with a medical discharge from the Navy.
And I would
during that time,
yeah,
not one counselor or psychiatrist said, we feel your son has something more than a young person's using street drugs with groups to be accepted.
So
we
they
never
couldn't identify
felt,
it either.
Yeah, we looked at that.
Uh-huh.
We grounded him. We took the keys away. We did all those kinds of things, never dreaming Stephen was really having reactions to you know, to his mental disease and self-medicating.
Oh, my God. Oh, gee. How did
self-medication can occur years before the mental problem is recognized. That's the sadness of it all. That's why, Mary Jane, when I go out and I speak, and I became mental health director at my St. Joseph's community here in Capitola in Santa Cruz, I did it because I want to bring awareness. And I try to answer questions that probably I wouldn't have asked 20 years ago because of the stigma.
Well, you know, I'm glad you said that because I'm not saying this of you, but I would imagine there are some folks out there that are even ashamed. Oh, my God, I can't have mental illness in my family.
Exactly. The stigma is so overwhelming. I have people come to my mental health classes, which we do a six-week series every Tuesday night from 7 to 8:30 and in our parish hall. And people come from everywhere. I've had them come from the Bay Area, Monterey area, right here, Salinas, and the first thing they'll say is, well, I never dreamt my loved one had a challenge of mental illness. I thought they were just messing up on drugs.
Yeah. Oh, sad. So basically, first of all, I have to ask the question. It's a difficult one, I know, but how does a mother survive something like this? This has got to be the most insurmountable tragedy that any mother could face.
What I do, Mary Jane, is I look back on the loving child that Stephen was. I look at how much his father loved him and how much we tried to do for him to keep his mental health challenge intact. I feel there could have been three of us that night who died in that bloody blur. And, yes, my life has been changed forever. It'll never be the same with the loss of watching the youngest son that you raised take his father's life and walk across the room and take his own life.
Hmm.
And what I say to myself is the Lord, this happened for a reason, and the Lord has blessed me with trying to educate others. And my deepest hope in the work I do is I can help another family to recognize what possibly we didn't recognize.
Right.
Try to educate them, break the stigma, bring hope.
Good for you. Now, you have other children?
I do. I lost a daughter to cancer in 1988, my firstborn. And we've lost Stephen and his dad, and then I have two other boys, Stephen's biological brothers, and two sisters.
And have there been any other signs that you've noticed, or is it this one time?
In the other children?
Yes.
I haven't noticed. They were always more outgoing. They were always more active in sports. They involved themselves, where Stephen was always very much of a loner.
Right.
Very quiet, very withdrawn.
Yeah, amazing. Now, you do have some recommendations. There are some things that you say, as parents, be looking for, and not only as parents, but for a spouse or a friend or anything else. And you recommend that list the medications the person is on.
Exactly.
Research websites. There's a lot of information out there, isn't there?
There's a lot of information out there, and every group, the proceeds of my book, Mary Jane, are to support the work of the nonprofits in Santa Cruz County. And Listening Well is one of those groups to bring education, to help support families that feel, could this or couldn't this be? And once you start into that type of work, you just want to help and get as much information out. They're one, NAMI, the National Alliance for Mental Illness, which I give websites off of my website.
And that is ultra important. You need to know more about it. Don't be afraid to educate yourself.
Exactly. And don't be afraid to ask questions and to allow people to give you the information and take a handout home, and you just might see something in that young person or that mentally challenged loved one that, yeah, you don't want to acknowledge, but it is there, and educate yourself. Get as much education as you possibly can.
You know,
what I always try to say at my meetings, how many families will say, you know, my son is schizophrenic. They're ashamed, and they feel there's something wrong with them, too.
Yeah.
And that's how that person, and they feel very responsible in some way.
There's shame, there's guilt, there's all those feelings, you know?
Right, and mental illness is no one's fault.
Yeah.
There is a very strong genetic tie, however.
Okay. Did it run in the family in the past, do you think?
Oh, yes, yes. In Stephen's biological family, there was a lot of genetic ties, bipolar, schizophrenia.
I would imagine, too, and this would be the hardest thing, is the one that you already mentioned, and that's ask questions. Do a probe. Do not be afraid to tackle it. I think a lot of people are, well, you know, that's a touchy subject. I really don't want to ask. And this could be with family and friends, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't want to stick my nose in somebody else's business.
And when you ask those questions, don't feel like you're asking. I have many professionals here. One doctor that treated my son. And because Stephen could behave in such a normal manner and look so normal, he was very hard to treat.
Right.
And he, you know, he would have problems staying on his medications, but the last 8.5 years of his life, he was on medications, on his psych meds, and not on street drugs at all. And that's what really through our family a curve, is because we just never thought he had the capability of hurting the person he loved so much.
And you know, the hardest thing I would imagine, too, is to say, I can't blame him for what he did, even though it was a terrible thing that he did, a horrific thing that he did. I can't blame him. It wasn't his fault.
Right. It's the disease, the what was going on in Stephen's mind. When I think back of that evening, that bloody blur of an evening, I think of my husband so happy thanking me for dinner on his way into the living room to sit down to watch the news. And Stephen so preoccupied, I asked him at least 3 times, how did your day go today, Steve? Okay. I never once dreamt, Mary Jane, he would stand up and go into the kitchen and grab a knife off our... And that's what I try to say at my speaking engagements is, I know you love this person, and I know you think they couldn't be capable, but please always be aware.
So you were actually in the house when it happened?
Oh, yes. It was 3 of us. Just the 3 of us were here.
Oh, my God. And he ended his life before he came after you?
He never once, I acknowledged him with the knife in his hand, and I said, Steve, what are you doing with that knife? And he just looked at me, which I told his doctor just recently. We were having coffee, and I said, he looked at me with a look that I can't talk to you right now. I'm too preoccupied. So we know that the uninvited guest was present, that he was being tormented by voices, probably not even a voice that said, this is your father. It was a complete different, who knows what he thought Stephen was.
Amazing. You are an amazing lady, you know that.
Thank you very much.
And you're doing an amazing thing. You are on a mission. I know that, too. Now, your website, again, is theuninvitedguest.org, correct?
Correct.
And the book, The Uninvited Guest, available at the bookstores now?
Yes, and available through me. They can get everything off the website or Amazon.com.
Oh, fantastic. Margaret, keep up your good work. You're a trooper. You really are.
Thank you, Mary Jane, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to try to help another family.
You betcha. Take care and God bless.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Now. That's Margaret Margot. And just to warn the network at BBS Radio, Don, My computer went down, so I'm not going to have any music on this side, and I can't text message back and forth. So it's kind of, we're going to fly blind here a little bit. So don't worry about the music not being there. We're ready for our next guest. And the next guest is going to be interesting, too, because we're going to be talking about breast cancer, which is a frightening thing for a lot of people. But this is a step further past what you consider the mammogram and all that kind of thing, because mammograms tell just a certain amount of information, not everything that we need. Once again, though, just to give you the information on Margaret Margot, the name of the book is called The Uninvited Guest. Can you imagine? Oh, God, what a story. What a story. And what a mission that she is on. See, everyone, I think, in life has to go through something, and then they find out what their real mission is on this earthly plane. Whether it happens to be what I'm doing, which is what I feel my mission is to be on radio and to share with you and to share information and to know that we can go on and we can survive. And there are others who have other missions in life. We're all set here to do something and complete something on this life plane. That's Margaret Margot's mission. It's called The Uninvited Guest. Again, the website is theuninvitedguest.org. And you know what? Sharing does help with healing, and that's one of the things that we try to do on Pop Off. And getting on to the next topic, this is, again, a topic that does strike fear in people. It's called breast cancer. And every time a woman hears even the mention of it, can frighten you to the hilt. I mean, you give up. Cancer is a word that everybody gives up on. So how can it be detected early, since that seems to be the best way for survival? We have self-exam, yes, that's excellent. We have the mammogram, yes, that's been the standard. But is there more? Are there other options? Well, John Pavlidis says yes. It's called computer-aided detection. It's sort of a spell check. It's a cute way to say it, but it's true. It's a spell check on the mammogram. And let's see if John is with us yet. John, are you online with us?
Yes, I am.
Hi, John. How you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
We're having a little computer problem on my side, so I don't have my little music intros and everything, so we're just going to jump right in here, okay?
Sure.
You say, let's start out with, the mammogram is still the standard, correct? You're not saying do away with the mammogram.
Oh, absolutely. The mammogram has been and continues to remain the standard.
Okay, so we still have the mammogram, we still do the self-exams and all that kind of thing. Now, what is this R2 technology that you're talking about, and how does it work?
R2 technology is the pioneer in a new field called computer-aided detection. And what we developed is computer software that analyzes the mammogram and puts marks on suspicious areas of the mammogram to really help the physician. And many studies have now shown that the product has been FDA-approved and has been out since 1998. Many studies have shown that we really do help significantly with earlier detection of breast cancer.
So the mammogram, and the mammogram, we have to be honest about it. It is the standard, but there are a lot of times there's false negatives and false positives. And you want to explain what that means?
Sure. A false negative, unfortunately.
Yes, and false positives.
Yeah, a false negative and a false positive. First, the false negative is when, for some reason, there is cancer, but it is missed. A false positive is when the physician thinks there is cancer and fortunately it's proven wrong and there is no cancer. And only biopsy really can determine whether there's really cancer or not.
Now, this technology, it's done, like you said, by a computer. Now, I've got to be honest with you. How do I trust a computer to diagnose something?
Well, it's very important to clarify. The computer itself does not diagnose anything. The computer puts marks, and the doctor does the diagnosis. So maybe it would help if I just took a step back and described the process. The doctor does the mammogram, and I think it's also worthwhile to note that there's been lots of very good developments in mammography itself. Digital mammography is now FDA-approved, and a recent major study showed that especially for certain groups of women, such as premenopausal women under 50 and women with dense breasts, it has significant benefits compared to classic film-based mammography.
Right.
But in any case, our system works with either a film-based mammogram or the latest and greatest digital mammograms. And it's the algorithm, the software, identifies suspicious areas that the doctor takes a closer look at. And the doctor may agree, oh, this really may be something that I would have missed, and let's follow up. Or the doctor may dismiss it as a false positive and not take action. But the diagnosis is always performed by the physician. We act as a second pair of eyes, and that's why even the company name, R2, means second reader.
Exactly. Now, is there any statistics so far as to what has been detected that would not have been detected without the R2?
Yes. There are a number of studies that have been done and also used in our FDA submission. The earliest work showed, and the reason why physicians started accepting our product is that up to 20% of breast cancer is missed on mammograms. And the combination of our system plus, of course, the doctor's eyes really helps to improve detection, and the published studies have various rates of improvement from 7% more cancers detected to up to 20%.
The chance of survival is better than is what you're saying.
Yeah, the key point really is we help with earlier detection. I mean, unfortunately, eventually all cancer is seen, but the whole goal is to catch it as early as possible when treatment options are most available.
Amazing. Now, are most doctors, when they suggest a mammogram or, they give you the prescription for a mammogram, are they aware of this R2 technology?
By now, most physicians are aware, although, sadly, the system is not in 100% of sites that do mammography. We estimate that about a third or so of mammograms performed in the United States every year are read with the help of our system.
Gee, that's not enough yet.
It's reimbursable. It's fast. It really doesn't slow them down too much at all, and from our perspective, given the significant evidence that it helps to detect cancer earlier, there's no reason not to use it.
Amazing. Now, the actual computer reading, that's not done when they take the mammogram. That's done after the mammogram's done?
Correct. It's done after the mammogram is done, but before the doctor looks at the mammogram. So the doctor reads the mammogram as they normally would, and then they press a button, and our system, which in the meantime has processed the data, puts additional marks that they need to pay attention to.
That's great. It's like a double check is what it is.
Exactly. And
okay.
It doesn't mean that doctors aren't doing a good job. It just means that they can always use help because breast cancer is so hard to find.
Oh, you bet. You bet. And especially, as you said, dense breasts, it's even more difficult. And with a lot of women who now have breast implants, that's again another problem.
It is. It's another big challenge for mammography.
Absolutely. Now, should we ask for it? Is it something that when the mammogram is prescribed, you say to your doctor, oh, by the way, can I have this R2 technology done?
Yes. I think when the woman makes an appointment, it certainly would never hurt to also ask if the facility offers computer-aided detection as an additional security blanket, additional safety factor.
What about cost?
It's reimbursed by Medicare. It's reimbursed by really most medical carriers.
Oh, okay.
So it's really there's no reason not to have it done. It's just for additional peace of mind. It doesn't mean there is no technology that catches 100% of cancer, but it definitely helps to improve the physician's performance.
Well, and you want to have the best technology available, and especially if it's at least covered by most insurances, might as well go for it.
Exactly.
Amazing. How long has this computer-aided detection been out?
We first released the product in 1998 and received the FDA approval, and we gained reimbursement. Congress actually passed an act in 2000, so it's been out and reimbursable for quite a while now.
You know, it is amazing.
And it continues to improve.
I'm sorry?
And it continues to improve.
How do you mean?
Well, the computer... It's nobody's saying that it's smarter than the doctor, but the one benefit that we have is we have a very, very large database of images with breast cancer. So the more the product is out there, the more we help train it, if you will, and the better and better it gets every year. Just for comparison, a busy mammography practice will do about 10,000 mammograms a year, let's say.
Uh-huh.
And that means they will see... statistically, about 40 cancers per year. based on the prevalence of cancer being approximately 1 in 250 mammograms will have cancer.
Okay.
So that means a doctor over, you know, in a busy practice over a 10-year period will see about 400 cancers, breast cancers.
Mm-hmm.
Conversely, with the database we have almost 7,000 breast cancers in our system. So that's many, many years of one person's experience all combined into the software.
Oh, that's great. And of course, technology, I would think, it constantly gets better and better, and so it will be refined as you go along.
Exactly.
So this is amazing. I've never heard of this. It's just incredible, since I do a talk show that has a lot to do with finding the highest technology, the best thing for people in their lives, and never hearing about this, I don't think the public is very much aware of it.
It's sad but true. Yeah, it's a wonderful tool that's been out there for a while. And R2 was recently acquired by a company that's a leader in women's health care. It's called Hologic. And they make digital mammography machines, really state-of-the-art, and also now they have the benefit of this computer-aided detection. So I think women should really be asking for CAD whenever they get a mammogram.
Amazing. Now, what about a website or some information that we can get on our own? Is that available?
Yes. You can go to www.r2tech.com. So r2tech.com.
And it gives a good explanation of what's going on, huh?
Yes.
Excellent. Well, this is great information. I appreciate the time you're spending with us. Anything else you want people to know about the device or how it works or what we should do about it? I think we've kind of covered it.
I think we've covered all the bases. I mean, again, I just want to emphasize, nobody's saying that doctors are not doing a great job, but it is so hard to detect, and there's no harm in having a second pair of eyes do a double check and help to find cancer earlier.
Yeah, because unfortunately, I wish I could say that, you know, all the newest technology will cure breast cancer, but probably detecting it as early as possible is probably the best possible detection, not only detection, but cure for cancer.
That's exactly right. The best weapon we have right now is early detection. And one study that just came out last fall, where a customer, Dr. Couples, down in South Carolina, really showed with a study of more than 20,000 mammograms, he helped, with using our CAD system, computer-aided detection, he helped find cancer on average 5.3 years younger, the women, when the cancer was detected with our system. So that's five mammography cycles earlier, and that's a huge improvement.
That's incredible. Oh. Well, John, I appreciate the time you spent with us today, and the more information we have, the better off we're going to be as far as helping ourselves, because we have to take responsibility for our own health.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Thank you very much. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Take care now, John.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Again, that's John Pavlidis, and it's called Computer-Aided Detection, CAD, CAD for short, but it's R2 technology. And if you go to their website, www.r2, that's the number 2, r2tech, T-E-C-H.com, it should give you a lot of information. Keeping on top of the latest information on Pop-Off, listening to BBS Radio, that is where it's at. We always try and give you the best and the brightest. Before we go to our last guest, which is all about husband hunting, but it's good practical information. It's a great little title for a book, and it's fun, but this actually does go after giving good information for yourself when you're out there looking for that special person in your life. Well, as a result of yesterday, we had Susan Allen on, and remember we talked about how prevalent the divorce rate is. It's incredible. And so I got this from a very dear friend by email after they heard the show yesterday. I thought it was perfect. It's called The Anniversary Fairy. Now listen, hold on. Don't jump ahead of me now, okay? A married couple in their early 60s were out celebrating their 35th wedding anniversary in a quiet, romantic little restaurant. Suddenly, a tiny yet beautiful fairy appeared on their table and said, "For being such a wonderful married couple and for being faithful to each other for all this time, I will grant you each one wish." "Oh, I want to travel around the world with my darling husband," said the wife. The fairy waved her magic wand and poof! Two tickets for the Queen Mary 2 luxury liner appeared in her hands. Then it was the husband's turn. We thought for a moment, actually said he thought for a moment and said, "Well, this is all very romantic, but an opportunity like this will never come again. I'm sorry, my love, but what my wish is to have a wife 30 years younger than me." The wife and the fairy were deeply disappointed, but a wish is a wish. So the fairy waved her magic wand and poof, the husband became 92 years old. The moral of this story is this. Men who are ungrateful should remember fairies are female. I love that. I thought that was so darn cute. Anyway, it's sort of like watching the, you know, some of the movies and you say, hey, be careful what you wish for. Can I get it? Anyway, talking about looking for Mr. Right. Well, there are a lot of Mr. Wrongs out there, but we want you to find Mr. Right. But always, the author of the book called Husband Hunting, Alinka Zerman, says she claims to have the blueprint for finding him. But that's the forever him that we're talking about. Alinka, are you there on Pop-Off yet?
Yes, hello.
Hi, Alinka. How are you?
Hi, thanks.
Great. You know, we talk about searching for that Mr. Right, and sometimes it can get very difficult, and sometimes the search itself is kind of, like, bogus. But when you say search, it almost sounds like we're doing a big game hunt out there, you know, for the prey that we're going to reel in. That's not what you're saying, is it?
Yes, I am.
Oh, you are? Okay.
I tell you why.
Okay, then give me some tips.
When men hear the word marriage, they run for the hills. There's many different types of men, and we have to know ourselves first very well so that we know exactly what our limits are, because when you start living with a person under the same roof, romance flies out the window after a while, and then you have habits that you can either live with or you can't live with.
You know, Alinka, I have to share something with you, because I have a couple of friends who are still looking for Mr. Right. But they have, I think, their criteria is all screwed up. They're looking for someone who's tall and handsome, who has money and a career. How about looking for someone who's loving and caring and nurturing and would be devoted to you?
Yes, but that comes with maturity. It depends on your age, because Americans tend to marry very young. We find our sweethearts in high school or college or marry in our 20s. The Europeans wait a little longer, and usually they don't get married until their 30s for economic reasons. So if we're looking for sex, obviously we're going to find that. That's very easy to find.
Yes.
But it doesn't always last when problems come around. With the pressures, you know, nowadays especially. So you have to know what type of a man you're looking for, and obviously that's done by trial and error. In other words, you have to kiss a lot of frogs before you find Mr. Right.
Oh, sure. But shouldn't you also put down what you're looking for? I mean, you really should know what you're looking for.
No, because, see, chemistry has a way of interfering. And when those hormones are raging and chemistry's there, we think with our hearts and not our head. Now, if we were smart, we'd make a list, just like a laundry list.
Yeah, that's what I mean. You got to put down your laundry list, because that chemistry kind of shoots it off out the window for you.
Yeah, no, it does. And we're genetically programmed for that. Otherwise, there'd be no procreation of the race.
Right.
So to ensure that we're going to reproduce, that chemistry is very, very strong.
And there's nothing wrong with the chemistry, but you got to have something after that, because I'll tell you, about a year and a half, there's all the romance, and you do things like bunnies, you know, and over and over and over. And then after that, what you got left?
Exactly. So you need a common denominator of a friend. In other words, if you have someone there who is loyal, who's going to stick with you, I mean, don't forget, marriage is an open-end contract. It could last 50 years, just like the joke you were saying a few minutes ago.
Right.
And we do change. And over the years, you have to kind of be flexible, because if not, that's when the arguments start over nonsense, such as somebody leaving the top off the toothpaste. You know, that could annoy a lot of people, or smoking a cigar at the dinner table, or just little annoying habits that get on your nerves.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you have someone that is a true friend and will stick with you through illness and supposedly the vows of till death do us part in health and so forth, in bad times too, then you've got a friend that is extremely loyal, that you can depend on, and that is worth a tremendous amount in any relationship.
Oh, you bet. Out of curiosity, are you married?
Yes. January, I will be married 30 years to the same man.
Ah, I got you beat. 35.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, but you know what? what you said was so important about making that list. Now, I'm not saying that when I was in college, I sat down and made a list that I could look at every time and compare. But I had in mind certain things that were important to me. And, you know, tall, handsome, and money was not at the top of the list. You know, it was people who I could, you know, find as a friend that I could confide in, that seemed loyal to me, that had caring and devotion, and had a good sense of humor.
Well, you know, for me, what was important was a sense of humor. Now, I was in California going to law school when I married my husband. He's a pilot out there. And I know a lot of pilots, the divorce rate's high, about 50% or more probably.
Yeah.
Because it's a very difficult life. You know, he's home 10 days a month. That's it. But I'm a very independent person. I like the time alone. I wanted a career so I could accept that type of life. I probably would have been bored married to a CPA who's home every day wanting dinner at the same time. I'm a creative person, and I like excitement and adventure, and marrying a pilot offered that.
Mm-hmm. That's good. But again, you knew what you wanted, and it set you up for what you wanted in life. There were other criteria that I remember thinking about all the time, and there were, you know, things like, I wanted my independence. I was just like you. It's like, I want to get married because I love the person, and I want to be dependent on that person, not that I have to be dependent on that person.
No, that's true. But, you know, a very good way of doing this, and it's the logical way, if couples can do this, a lot of people cannot. Depends on your cultural background or your religion. Some people can't be this cold. But if you get married a little bit older, in other words, not when you're 22, 23, when you still don't know yourself very well, make a laundry list that says, okay, what about an older guy? Could I be married to a man older that has position and power and money and that can give me the type of lifestyle that I want? Would this work? Or do I have to be married to the dumb jock on the beach who's got muscles that are shining in the sunlight and who's just turning me on something fierce, and he's so handsome? And but you see, sometimes these good-looking guys with movie star looks make lousy husbands.
Yeah. Well, I lucked out. I got a handsome guy, but I did. But that's not what I was looking for, you know?
Well, you were lucky.
Yeah. But, you know, no. There wasn't luck involved. Seriously, because I met in college. We met in college, so, I mean, the field is pretty big, you know, when you're in college, on both sides, for men and women both. But again, you need to find out something about yourself before you marry, and discussion and communication before that marriage. I mean, we need to talk about kids and careers and what we want out of life and what our desires and our wishes are, not waiting till after and figure it'll all settle out in the laundry after we get married. It just doesn't.
That's true. Like in the book I wrote, Husband Hunting, the protagonist, Alicia, had no reason for marriage because she was having a great time being single. But when her stepfather suggested she might turn into an old maid, he made her an offer she could not resist. He would pay her ticket around the world, all expenses paid, providing she returned with a husband. If not, she had to reimburse him.
Oh, brother.
So therefore, she started meeting men of different cultures, different religions, different backgrounds. By the time she got back to the States, she knew exactly what she did not want.
Did she find somebody?
Yes, in California.
Ain't that amazing? Go around the world and find them in your own backyard.
Yes, but by now she knew herself very well. And she knew exactly what she wanted out of her life, because this is not a dress rehearsal. We only go around once. So it's a very good idea not to make too many mistakes.
Well,
and I think she said, all right, I know I don't want the Latin type of Romeo, because he's always looking around at other women, and that's not for me.
Okay.
So she crossed that type of man off her list, and so forth and so on. Each chapter describes the country in which she's living and the type of man she's having an affair with. And finally she said, oh, this is great for adventure, but to live with a person under the same roof, I need certain traits, certain character traits.
You know, there's another thing that I don't think most potential couples even think about, and that is, what is inside the person? I mean, in a spiritual way. I don't mean in a religious way, because, you know, religions have gotten us into too much trouble, you know, because everybody either agrees or disagrees with a particular religion, and if it's not theirs, it's probably not right. But a spirituality, something that makes that person who and what they are from the inside out, not from the outside in.
That's very important, the spirituality, because you need to connect. And I know that countless studies have shown that people who are connected with a partner with this deep, satisfying, intimate relationship, not just sex for, oh, how nice, I'll see you next Friday type thing, but in order to connect, it reduces the risk of heart disease, depression, migraines, arthritis, and boosts your immune system. Genetically speaking, we're programmed to search to connect spiritually with a partner.
Well, that's, you know, that's the species. We're put down on this earth so we can, you know, link up with somebody that we can really rely on. I mean, I don't know what I would do if I couldn't come home at night after a pretty taxing day and have someone that I can say, oh, boy, was it a miserable day, or, gee, what a wonderful time I had, someone to share with.
Yes, you have to form that bond, because affairs are not healing. If two people never form a meaningful bond, then you don't have that connection, and that's the secret here, to connect. Not only to talk about your problems, say, oh, you know, this and this went on, and to have a sympathetic ear, but also someone to share a lot of laughter with, because 20 seconds of shared laughter produces the same cardiovascular benefits as a 3-minute aerobic exercise.
Oh, really? I like that.
Well, that's according to the experts. I don't know where they come up with all these studies, but...
But, you know, it's true. And again, it's nice when you have someone who can laugh at the same things that you laugh at.
Well, that's where you connect, you see.
Mm-hmm.
People who enjoy the same movies or the same type of music or classical music or the same type of sports. We can't be a clone, because men and women are different, and we look at things from a different perspective. So,
and I would think, too, now, Alinka, I need to get your read on this. Unfortunately, a lot of people say, well, I married this certain person. People evolve. We all evolve. And you want to evolve. I don't want to be the same young girl 35 years ago. I don't want to be married to the same young man that I married 35 years ago. We all evolve. So we have to accept that there will be change. But it's not necessarily bad to change.
No, it's not necessarily bad to change, because as we get older and our health deteriorates, you know, it's nice to be glamorous and to look gorgeous and to have that tiny little tight waist and so forth and so on. But if we fear that our husband's going to be looking over our shoulder at somebody a little bit younger, then our insecurities start to multiply. And we don't feel comfortable in our own skin. But if you're with a partner, and I was talking to a gentleman just yesterday, he said, oh, you women are just too concerned about having an extra couple of pounds on. He says, it doesn't matter to me.
Hmm. It's nice that it doesn't matter to him, but it matters to a lot of other guys, and you better find out the difference.
Yes.
You better find out who it does matter to, because you're right. And usually, I hate to say this because the guys out there are going to say, Mary Jane, you're terrible. But it's mostly the guys who have that pot belly who are looking for the really svelte woman.
That's funny, and that usually comes from drinking beer, which is a great old American sport. Now, I'm European, and my husband's typical American. I mean, they used to laugh at the pilots out in California because they would never wear socks with their shoes, and they're always tennis fanatics, which to this day he still is.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, I was into opera, and when I take him to the opera, he'd sit and snore next to me.
Oh, my God.
So I developed a sharp elbow, and there's no way I could take him to a Wagnerian opera any more than he could take me to a baseball game.
Oh, Buster. But you accepted that. You knew that of each other.
Yes, because we connected in other areas. In other words, it wasn't just the fact that John was very handsome and he was All-American, and he played all the sports in school and so forth. I like that. But he was a family man, because originally he had come from Utah. His family was from Utah. So he was very family-oriented, and I needed that because my family was in Poland and Scotland and scattered, and I was lonely here. So that loneliness was searching for someone who came from a big family. I needed that, and I connected on that level.
That's great. I love the idea. Now, tell them a little bit about what they're going to get when they pick up husband hunting.
Well, the girls, for example, are going to learn that you don't have to go for the perfect mate, because they don't exist. And if you search too much, you might end up with nothing. It's better to take someone who, on a scale of 1 to 10, fits a 7, and you might be extremely happy with him. And, it would be a very solid relationship. And if the men read my book, towards the end, they'll find that I talk about President Nixon, and there's a little bit of politics there, and I talk about Russia, and I talk about Germany. So geographically and historically speaking, I try to spice it up and not just make it a regular romantic novel.
That's fun. You know, is it true, their statistics show that a girl looks for someone, looks for her father in someone that she's going to marry. Is that true?
To a certain extent, yes. We all have this father image, but I think that means someone who's there, a secure relationship, someone who is going to be there for us and not run off. In other words, not abandon us.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Because I had a darling father. I am my father. It's just like we were mirror images of each other. And I loved certain traits of my father, but he had a terrible temper. So one of the things that I said, yes, he has strength, he's a rock, he's a devoted family man, but boy, I don't want anybody with that kind of temper. I mean, there are certain things that you need to really consider.
Yes, and I've heard that from other women, too, where they say to me, my father was a heavy drinker, and I don't care how much money this guy has, I cannot be married to someone who drinks.
Amazing. Oh, but do you have a website, by the way?
I do. It's www.alinka, that's I-L-I-N-K-A, Zyrmont, Zyrmont.com.
Again, I better spell that for everybody. And by the way, if they don't get the spelling down, I'll put that up on my website, popoff.com, and make sure they can go there, too. But again, it's A-L-I-N-K-A, and then the last name, Zyrmont.com, correct?
That's correct, Mary Jane.
And the book Husband Hunting, available where?
Well, in Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble, or you can order it from your local bookstore.
Fantastic. Well, I want to thank you for being with us. We got to keep hammering away at people, because that divorce rate has just got to go down. Enough of this nonsense.
It's getting up there, and it's a shame. It's sad. But anyway, Mary Jane, thank you so much for having me on your program.
My pleasure. And we got to keep hammering at people because we want to make their lives better. Take care.
Thank you.
Alinka Zyrmont, the book again, Husband Hunting. Dedication is the key in any relationship. Now, normally I have my little music bed here. We close off the show. So, Don, warning, warning. We're just about a minute away from being on the end of the show. So I'm just going to give you a warning because my computer is down, so no music to play on this side. Sorry about that. I'll just have to sing for you instead. But I want to thank all of you for being with me on Pop Off. It's been a pleasure, as always, because I want to give you tools for life. Tools for life is what it's all about. If we can't share with one another, then what is the sense of our doing what we do? So we will make sure that we'll be here for you tomorrow at high noon, as we always are. And Pop Off will continue with good guests for you, good strong guests for you. Later on this week, we even have someone who says smell and taste have to do with relationships and how a person reacts to different things. So all that's going to be coming up on Pop Off. In the meantime, you live simply, laugh often, love deeply, and above all else, dare to dream. That's what it's all about. Have a wonderful day. I'll talk with you tomorrow on Pop Off.